Okay, so good morning, everybody. My name is Michele De Bortoli, and I am from the second department holding this kind of molecular biology course. Good morning. We still have four seats here. You can take it, please. This one. You can find a place somewhere here also, if you want. So this course will be held by three persons that you see here. The first is me, and the second one is Valentina Perisi, who is don't be mistaken by the name. She is Italian originally, but she works since 20 years in USA, and she will perform a module around Easter. Okay, so it's kind of visiting professor, and she works since many years in the same field that is the main subject of our course. So I think that her contribution will be basic, fundamental. Okay? And the third module, buongiorno. You have still seats here if you want. One here, and you can take the other one here. And the third person is Santina Kutrupi, who was with me in the Department of Clinical and Biological Sciences, and she will make a kind of a applicative module. She will talk about application of what we learned today here in the course, okay, to the medical side, okay, so application in medicine, essentially, okay? Good. So this is the schedule, more or less. So I will take care of you in the 2 weeks here, and then we'll have the module of Valentina Perisi, and then back to me for a while, and then finally with Santina Kutrupi. The reason why I opened a doodle yesterday was that. Since Valentina Perisi is only here around Easter, we have to try to put her lessons in the best way for you. In order to have the minimum of you not being present, because it's very important both from the English language side and for the content. Okay, so. In any case, we will have kind of a video and audio registration of the recording of the lessons. Okay, and I try because this morning was kind of tragic. There is nothing working, but I will try to have everything working for this period. Okay, so using the WebEx platform, I don't know if you know it. So you need to. Service, we will have this kind of recording, so you can probably, people who will not be able to be here in that period can actually have the lesson streaming, okay? Okay, good morning. Please make an additional place somewhere for the person was arrived right now. Maybe you can stand in between. It's contrary to any kind of safety rules, but anyway, that's the way. Okay, so just two words on my career, so you know who is your teacher. I was graduated here, and in fact, this coming to this Aula Mauro was coming something like a jump into the past and for my head, because I actually graduated in Torino several years ago, unfortunately. And actually there was courses running in this Palazzo Campana at that time in biology, so I knew already the corridor, not the room, but the corridor. Okay, so, and that's kind of historic place, but anyway, good. And then I made my at that time there was not really a PhD program in Italy. There was no PhD program. I mean, you just finished it with laurea, okay? And so I moved to be a postdoc in this institute that is very close to here in Ivrea, that is a biomedical research center. And then at the end of 3 years, I moved to the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, in which I spent 2 years and a half of my life. And then back to Torino as a research assistant in biochemistry. Buongiorno. This is the very last one. So the next student will stand up, okay? Let me count you. Forty people, so three people left out. Okay, good. I will write something to the faculty anyway. Okay. So coming back to my career, so in 1991 I moved to Switzerland, to Basel, when I spent 1 year at the Friedrich Miescher Institute. By the way, Friedrich, do you know who was Friedrich Miescher? Ever heard? Really? Friedrich Miescher was the guy who discovered DNA. You don't know that? He was a Basel scientist who was actually studying composition of cells. And in 1882 or something, he discovered a substance that was acidic in the nucleus of the cells. Actually, he was working with eggs, of course, because at that time it was a little too difficult to go inside a very small cell, so that they were taking eggs. And discovered there was acidic substance that he called DNA. Okay? He called it actually not DNA, was called nucleic acid. Okay? So it was just a kind of very large definition, but that nobody took care of it just because it was too simple, you know. It was just a more acidic molecule. From the chemical point of view, it was all the same, very flat, so nobody actually took care of this DNA until the recent years, as you know. Okay, anyway, so this is the institute that is named after this scientist. Then I was back again, and I had the charge of molecular biology in Torino, and then I moved for something like 10 years in the Institute of Cancer Research in Candiolo with the Professor Sismondi. I made a short visit to La Jolla in 1999, and then I was back in Torino. I founded a molecular assistant biology center, and now I am full professor. And so on. And finally, this is the last most important thing. I have the responsibility of a PhD program, which is this complex systems for life science, and I strongly push you to take information about this doctorate program, because as you know that since a few years you have to apply in March, not this year of course, but next year in March you have to apply already for the PhD. Okay, so think about it. Okay, so moving ahead, this is research. So not my life. Can you sit? Difficult.
It's fine.
You can sit. Okay, so in all my life, I started working on these steroid hormone receptors in breast cancer at the very beginning of my career. Actually, my thesis work when I was a student was not about this subject. I worked on sodium potassium ATPase, that is the channels, transferring ions across membranes. But then when I moved to my, let's say, postdoctoral position, I started working in breast cancer. And then this was actually the start, and I'm still working in breast cancer now. So I kind of fixed idea. And then I started to work on gene expression. Okay, so this, so my idea was, not only mine, of course, scientific idea in that period was that gene expression was a fundamental aspect of development and progression of cancers, and so this was the story. So we started to look at estrogen, anti-estrogen, that is drugs, okay, for breast cancer, how they were affecting gene expression in tumors, in cell model systems, and in other context, and then we started to look for gene signatures. You know that one of the most interesting application, I'm talking about the first 2K years, something like, 2002, 2006, something like this. We are starting to understand that looking at gene expression, we can characterize tumors. Okay, so tumor A has a specific expression of genes. Tumor B has another pattern of gene expression, and tumor C another one else. And then you cannot treat the tumors in the same way, because they have different biological entities, okay? They have sensitivity to different drugs. They have different, let's say, progression patterns. So one, for example, tumor A is very quick metastasizing. Tumor C is very slow. So we have to treat them with different clinical strategies. And so we were actually not taking care of clinical strategy, of course, because I'm not a medical doctor, but we were trying to go deep and deep, deeper and deeper in this profiling, just to be able to, what is today the magic word is personalization of therapy. Okay, so personalization of medicine is also. And then, this is the period in which, as you probably already know, in 2003, the Human Genome Project was over. Okay, the sequence of the human genome was published at that time. And actually, the very, very big international projects started to understand different things. First, human variation, how the genomes of people are different from each other. Okay. Second, what is the meaning of all those letters that you see in the genome? Okay. You know that the very, very little fraction of our genome is coding for proteins. Very, very little, something like maybe not more than 2%. Okay. So everything else, what is the meaning? So people started to try to annotate. We say, the bioinformatic term, annotate. It means giving a functional meaning to every letter of the genome. Okay, and so in this kind of period, the people also realized with a technical turnover, that was the discovery of this NGS, next generation sequencing, people started to understand that most of our genome actually is transcribed in RNA. And most of this RNA is not coding. Okay, so what is the meaning of this non-coding genome? Very difficult. Today, we have very little information. If you, I will explain it in the lessons, but if you look at any kind of database, reporting sequences of our, we call it transcriptome, that means all the RNA which is inside the cells, okay? You see that actually we have more, and largely more, genes that are transcribed in non-coding RNA than number of the genes coding for proteins. So we have a universe, let's say, that is completely unknown, or almost completely unknown, because if I have to say, for example, we usually divide this non-coding transcriptome in small and long, just for technical reasons, okay? In small transcriptome, we know all the microRNAs, and we know exactly how they work, exactly, 90%, how they work in biological terms, okay, in the mechanism, okay? But for the long non-coding RNA, in which, for example, in the GeneCode database, that is one of the most important, as you will see in the next lesson, they actually have something like 20,000, I'm not kidding, 20,000 long non-coding genes. And we don't know anything about that. Maybe that we have the function of, or maybe a dozen. So this is kind of completely unexplored biology that we have to understand. And we started to look at that. We were studying the action of estrogen receptor. As you know, estrogen receptor is the leading proteins in a part of breast cancer. Okay? And we started to look at, this is a transcription factor, how this controls the expression of long non-coding RNA. Okay? And which of these 20,000 long non-coding RNA was important for breast cancer? This is the research activity that we run today. Okay, so just making this study short, coming back to your course. Okay. So, as you probably guessed from the introduction, the main focus of this course will be regulatory genomics. So we are trying to make a monographic course in which we try to understand how gene expression is controlled in cells, okay? And it's more than enough, because there are so many levels of control: transcription, post-transcription, chromatin structure, post-transcription, alternative splicing, transport to the cytoplasm, post-transcriptional control like microRNA binding to and killing and inhibiting translation, and many other things. So we have so many levels of control of gene expression that is more than enough for a course. Okay, so that's the point. We will go through this large chapters that are the functional organization of genomes and the regulatory mechanism and motifs, regulatory networks, and finally genome regulation in human disease. So this is more or less the design. So we have more or less this kind. I say more or less because we have still to organize a little better this intervention by Valentina Perissi, so I don't know exactly the hours, but just to have an idea, I will have more or less 14 hours now for me, with me, then you have 24 hours with Perissi. You will have also some 2 afternoons each of you in the computer room to make some work in browsers. And then again, you will have 10 hours reports. I will explain what reports are shortly. And then 20 hours of lecture with Santina Kutrupi. So this is more or less the plan. And then I have a very slides with a lot of text I won't go through. This just for recording. So you will have the slide on the Moodle site. You can read it. Okay, this is just the course objectives, okay, in terms of the, what we weight, what are the specific objectives of the course, and what we expect to have as outcome. This is just the transposition of what you find in the official course description. Okay, and then this is the expected outcomes in terms of knowledge, ability, and understanding. You will read it, no problem. I won't go through now, okay? So passing to something that usually is more interesting to you is how to have an exam at the end, because we should have an exam. So in the exam, we are actually checking for these 3 points. One is the knowledge of basic concepts. What I mean with basic concept is what you find in books. Okay, you take any kind of books, okay, recent book of molecular biology, and there are concepts like implication of DNA, transcription, translation, okay, this is a basic concept, okay? So you have to know them, okay? No way. Actually, I know that they are explained in the first level courses, in the triennial, okay? But nonetheless, you cannot ignore that basic concept in the advanced course, okay? So if anybody of you comes from a different background, I don't know, we may ask for that. Okay, please, people who had in the first level biology or biotechnology, almost everybody. So, who did not have biology or biotechnology? What? You coming from?
Natural science.
Natural science. You coming from?
96.
What? I didn't get
it. Nutrition
field. Oh, okay. Nutrition field. So, okay. So, anyway, who is from Turin? Who is not from Turin? Okay, minority. Anyway, that's. Whatever is the situation, okay, we will try to check what is your base knowledge, okay, and then we make some kind of basic work to bring everybody of you to the same level. I try to do it, okay. In the Moodle site, shortly I will check if the line is back again. In the Moodle site, at the very end of the page, you will find some basic helps, okay? They are videos or just a list of sites, websites, where you can find basic information in molecular biology. And there is also a link to an electronic version of the Watson Molecular Biology, which is probably one of the best book ever. And this is completely free, so just to connect. The only problem is that you cannot print it out, okay? But you can read electronic version on your screen, and all the book is not the very last edition, but it's a second last edition that is more than enough to have basic concept. Okay, so all the materials is there. No excuses, okay, for ignorance. Good. Well, okay. So the second point is understanding the specific concept, because of course this is an advanced course of molecular biology, and so we try to add some new concepts, okay, to the basic ones. For example, I was talking before on long non-coding RNA. This is not present in the basic molecular biology books. So this is a specific concept that you have to know. In other words, specific concept means the content of this course, okay? And three, and this is very important for me, is the understanding of methodology. We are not making a methodological course, okay? But every time we have an information in database or that we try to explain here, or a paper, or article that we examine on, so there is a specific methodology that was used to get that information. And to me, it's very important, it's essential that students understand exactly what the methodology was. Because depending on the methodology that you employ to examine a biological problem, depending on that methodology, you know exactly what the information is. Okay? I try to make an example. You want to study the position of a gene in a chromosome. You want to know if a gene is on chromosome, I don't know, number, okay? And you want to be know if it is centromeric or telomeric or in the middle or whatever else. Which kind of techniques you can use? Which kind of methodology you can use? Probably you know already. Just try to think. Any suggestion? Do you know what is fish? The fish. No, not the fish, not that fish. F-I-S-H. Fluorescent? Somebody, please, please. Fluorescence inside hybridization. Okay, this is a technique in which you have a probe. Okay, probe means a nucleic acid with a sequence. Probably a part on a small part of the gene you are studying. Okay, then you label it with something, a fluorescent or just a tag that then you can recognize with an antibody or something. And you take the chromosome in the cells. Take the cells. Usually take cells in the metaphase in which the chromosome are like rods. Okay, the classical appearance of chromosomes, okay, the rods, and you put this on a glass slide, you treat in order to get the DNA open, okay, unfold, okay, and then you put your probe in. The probe will recognize the sequence of the gene on the chromosome, will stick it, okay, and then when you examine to the microscope, you will have this classical image of, you know, the couples of chromosomes together, and then you have a small fluorescent dot somewhere. You can recognize the chromosome and say, okay, this is there. Second choice, please. We are talking about 2080, okay? 18, that is today. Is there any other methodology you can use to localize a sequence or a gene or whatever in the human chromosomes?
Use a software.
For example, using software. Imagine that the gene that you are trying to localize is not a human gene. For example, it's a retrovirus. Do you know what is a retrovirus? HIV, for example. Okay, it integrates in chromosomes, but you don't know where. Okay. So this sequence is not present in the human genome pattern. Okay, so you cannot find it. How can you do it? How can you manage to do it? Sorry about this, but it's horribly hot today, this morning.
We can sequence all the genome.
Yeah, we're reaching up. No, I'm kidding. Today is not that expensive, of course. Yeah, something like you can try to find the sequence of your gene. There are many, many different ways to do it, okay? But for example, you can use primers, okay? And then amplify the sequence that are on the sides of the point of integration, okay? So the virus goes to chromosome, I don't know, 12, okay? In the telomeric position, and so, and you will have sequences on the right and on the left. Okay, you use primers. Outside there are special techniques. Okay, and then you sequence that, and you can recognize. Okay, so now what is the difference in between fish and this sequencing technique? In your mind. One is colored, the other is not. Okay, I'm kidding. What is the difference? The main difference, please. You were trying to say something. Okay? Can we get back? Okay, you have an image, the microscopic image. You have the rods of chromosomes, okay? And you can recognize which is which, because we have so many images of chromosomes, so it's very easy to do it, okay? And then you have a small dot somewhere. The other side, you have sequencing. So you have a sequence that will probably comprehend, will be composed of part of the retrovirus and the flanking sequence. What is the difference?
Sequencing means a computational system.
Yes, of course. No, but I mean in terms of results. Okay, very good. Specificity. Because with a fish, I can say it's telomeric or centromeric or in between maybe, but I don't have information about the exact point in which the insert was made. And this may be very important because, for example, the insertion of a retrovirus inside a gene, inside the sequence of a gene, will disrupt the function of that gene, okay? Can you understand? Good. So this kind of information is only obtainable by sequences, not by fish. Okay? Fish is important for different things. For example, if you want to know in which position this gene will be in, not in the metaphase, but in the interphase, when the genome works, in the interphase, okay, when the cell leaves, okay, and works. And you want to know, for example, if the gene is in the center of the nucleus rather than in the periphery of the nucleus. And you will see on Monday how important it is to be in the center or in the periphery of the nucleus. Of course, you use fish, because fish is a morphological technique. So coming back to the story I was telling, the methodology you employ to have an information is very important to understand what exactly is the information you get. Okay, so we have to understand the methodology that people use in papers, articles, and scientific reports to understand exactly what is the information that we have. Okay? Good. Exam. So what is the evaluation? Evaluation is in three parts, okay? Each of the parts will have 33 out of 30 as a grade. And then we make an average here of the three parts. What the parts are? Okay, the first part concerns your participation in course. Okay, we will have activities on Moodle. Sometimes there are activities on Moodle. I use Moodle very, very, very heavily. So just please be connected all the time. And for example, you will have the first activity starting from today. And then you have this activity. So at the very end, there is a logbook for everybody of you. So I will try to make a sum of your... an average of your participation, and this will compose a score. Okay, and then this is a small part actually. Okay, and the largest part is this two, that is selecting, analyzing, and reporting a scientific article. Okay, so at the very end of the our part, you will select a paper from the literature, you will be, not me, okay? Of course, coherent with the subject that we explain, okay? And recent paper, recent I mean published in 2017 or 18, okay? And then you will, usually in couple of students, because usually it's quite useful to have somebody to discuss with, okay? And you will present in a half an hour the content of that paper. Okay, so this make a first evaluation. Okay, the composition of these two things. Then you have a test, Moodle-based test. Okay, with scoring and open question, and this is will take both our part and the Santina-Cutrupi final part. okay, on medical application. And again, you have a up to 3330 grade here. And then you will have an interview with me, a short interview that is not random. We have a very very fixed way to conduct the interview. You will have one question on subject that I will tell you in advance. So you will have a list of subjects in which you can discuss in 10 minutes, and then one question, because you will have on each chapter of the course, you will have one research paper to study, one. So overall five, okay? And there is will be a specific methodological question in that paper. Okay, so this is very fixed, very clear. Then we make the average. Okay, of course, this is a way to go that is depends quite strongly on your participation in the course. Okay, so now what I mean is that in my personal experience, if you go through all the activities, all the reports, and try to follow the course and so on, usually you sustain the exam in the first sessions. Says not the very first one, the second one, and usually the results is very high. This is historic. I mean, if you look back to the courses, this is the story. Okay, so I strongly suggest you to do it, because what I noticed is that people waiting months and months to give the exam, as you usually do in Italy, is very bad, extremely bad. I mean, if you look at the average grades, putting the first session, when I say the first session means July, June, July, and September, more or less, okay? Then make an average of people sustaining the exam after that is, you know, something like this. And it's true, because, of course, you have, if you work every day, it's very easy to understand everything, okay? This is just a comment, because we are fighting. I'm making another deviation from the main course. Is that we are starting now, this is the first year we are launched the International Course in Medicine in San Luigi, okay? And this is another anomaly, because most of you are Italian, from Italy, okay? But on the opposite side, most of the people coming to the medicine course in San Luigi are actually not Italian. So we have something like 70 people from outside and 30 people from inside. Okay, and all of them are completely astonished by our system of having exams like every month or having many, many sessions. I mean, in France, in Germany, in Holland, so there is one session of exam. I mean, you make a course and then you give an exam. This is natural, it's normal, okay? In some of the countries, they have, let's say, a general exam that takes all the courses together, okay? So they have examination during the course, and then a final examination. And in some of the countries, you have two occasions. It means before vacations and after vacations to pass the exam, and then that's it. And people who don't pass the average on all the courses just repeat the year, okay? And so this absolute anomaly what we do in Italy, having exams all the time. And this is an important problem when we think also of having international relationship with other people. And finally, okay. So in the first part, you will find five chapters that we open progressively in the Moodle, okay? And for each chapter, there will be some fixed stories. One is the one review. Maybe in the third chapter, two reviews, but anyway. And one scientific paper, okay? You will find in Moodle, scientific paper, review and so on. And this is the review is actually your textbook. Okay? So I don't, we will not have any textbook, real textbook like a book. Okay? You will study on these reviews. Okay? So you read the reviews and try to understand what is the content, and that's enough. I mean, when we will make the final interview at the exam, I will not look at the slides. Okay? We won't look at the slides that I use for the course. We just take the reviews that I gave to you, chapter by chapter, and ask questions over that review. Okay? So, forget about slides. No, not forget. I mean, you can use, of course, to try to understand aspects or something, but it's not the composition of the course, is not the slides that I and other teachers will show. Okay? And the scientific paper actually is what I told you before. For each chapter, there is one scientific paper that you have to study. Okay? The other story. Okay, chapter and reviews will be given in advance. Okay, and again, if you want to follow the course with proficiency in order to be able to give the exam right away and spending few time spending on books and texts and so on, you have just to read it before. This is very important. Because if you read before, you will probably understand a little. But when you come here with me, we will understand 100%. If you don't read it before, you come here and try to get what I say, I am very inefficient. Because you don't know what I am talking about. And it's very difficult, especially because I am talking bad English. You have probably a bad understanding of English. So this makes a story very difficult. If you read in advance, you know the content already, and then the questions and the explanation that I can make to you become valid. Okay? Good. So, the first one, you have it already. Has anybody of you took a look of it? No. Nobody took a look of the review that I opened on the bold site? Not yet. Yes, you did?
This one?
Yes, of course. There's only one. Good. Okay, it's not that. So, for the lectures, we will do discussion of the assignment paper, refreshing basic knowledge on the subject, and then looking through the concept questions and so on, experimental approach, and we'll discuss also other scientific papers that will contribute knowledge to the subject. Okay? Okay, so in the Moodle website you will find the lecture PDF, the one that I'm projecting now, the textbook, the research papers, and then this is essential to you, okay? What you really need, okay? Then you find the bibliography, that is nothing that we I don't require you to take a look at the bibliography, but just for reference. This is the bibliography that I read to set up the slides that I show you. Okay, so for example, if you have anything that you don't understand in a slide, you can go to the paper and see the explanation about it. Okay, usually it's not needed, but anyway, I put the bibliography there. Then there are activities, okay, activities and tasks, exercise and other things that are just utilities to have comprehension, and then is the activity that I will measure globally at the end of the course. And the very last chapter is background help that I told you, okay? So this is the link. I actually put the court. I don't know if anybody of you is new to the CMB. You are new, so you were not in the first semester. Okay, so just please go to this site and then login, there is no password for the moment. Okay, then I will put a password starting from Monday, because otherwise there are funny guys that are trying to enroll just for fun. Okay. Okay, so this is what I told you before. The slides are not a textbook. The textbook is the review. Okay, this is explanation of what I told you. Right? But just to add something, okay? So you will have to face this kind of textbook and research paper. Textbook, sometimes they are a little difficult because it may be that usually this kind of articles, reviews are written by scientists, okay? So, written by scientists who are specialists in a field, okay? So sometimes, quite often, they give for many things for acquired, okay? So they do not, for example, do not explain how a methodology is or whatever else, just mention the name. Sometimes it's not a name, but it's the slang name of something, and so sometimes it's difficult. You can refer to any of the database that are online. Do you know this one? Yeah, NCBI MBL. It's open, so you can just, if you have a name of a gene or whatever that you don't understand, you don't know, just type in the browser, and you get a short explanation about what it is. So it's very easy. Or you can also rely on Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a kind of funny story, but at least for molecular biology, I checked the information for many, many stories. It's quite correct, so 99% of the time there is no objection to use it, at least for have a general information. You can study and make a professional background on Wikipedia, but just to have information. I use it, for example. I'm teaching in the medical course. I was mentioning before, I teach very basic biochemistry, and I use it to take the formulas and so on, because it's so easy, no problem. Okay? This is another excellent solution. There is a forum, probably I didn't open yet, but I will open a student forum to the Moodle site, and if you have a question, like general question, whatever. Starting from the question, there will be lesson tomorrow morning, say, or to a very special question like, I didn't understand what the modification of histones, is used for, and other people will answer. And if the question is standing for a while and they see there is no answer, I can answer to it. So it's a very good way to communicate for that, okay? Finally, research paper. Research paper are original scientific articles, not really very recent papers, but fundamental papers in which people discovered something that is very strong. Okay, this paper have to be studied very carefully. So you have to go through the methodology very carefully to the conclusion and so on, because this is a important part of learning. And I will examine with you the first one, just to show you how to go through the scientific paper and study, understand, and so on. Okay, then the other ones will be free for you. Okay. This I told you already. Okay, this is a Moodle activity. You will find both normal quiz or lessons in the Moodle style. Probably you know already how it works. And there will be also technical forums. For example, next week I will open a methodological forum in which you are responsible to assembling together information about the methodologies. Okay. For example, I say NGS. Everybody knows what is NGS, but probably nobody of you knows exactly all the different flavors of the technology. There are many, many different technological patents on NGS that use different tricks. okay, and they can be used for different purposes. For example, they, I don't know, everybody knows Illumina, probably. Most of you? Okay, most of you know Illumina, and everybody uses Illumina, but Illumina is very useful for many, many, many things. It's not fit for others. For example, if you are trying to sequence the genome of a busy insect lives in I don't know where, it's not useful because you don't know anything about that genome. Illumina is not very good because it has very short reads. And short reads are very difficult to assemble when you don't have any kind of frame to put the reads. On the contrary, there are technologies that are less popular, something like the Pacific Biosciences technique that is make very long stretches of sequence. And this is much more useful when you have to sequence up a completely unknown organism or something. Okay? And so we try to assemble this kind of information. Okay? Okay, these are okay. They are limited in time. Okay, the exercise and tasks will have an open frame. Okay, so you will find, for example, the first activity I open it today, and since we are quite close to the next lesson, you will have only 4 days open to execute it. Not only 4 days, and then it will disappear. It's a different story. You will have 4 days. In order to get your activity in the logbook. Okay? So I have a grade book overall, and your activity will be inserted in that logbook only if you execute it in the right time. Then the activity will be open forever. Okay, but not graded. Okay. So if you do it as soon as possible, you will acquire important knowledge inside. And then improved comprehension of the next class, and then everything will be easier. Okay. This is a general story. Think about. Imagine to be had a kitchen course, Italian kitchen course. And in the very first lesson, the teacher explains you. What are the flavors that you can put on the food? Like a cardamone or aneto. I don't know the names in English of that, sorry. Or rosmarino or whatever else. And then you lose the lesson because you are outside or just to make the exercise or whatever. And the next lesson, the teacher won't mention again what is all the meaning of this ingredients, okay? They just say, okay, you cook that and put cardamom and this and this and this, and you don't know anything. You don't understand what we are doing. And exactly the same story here, okay? We are trying to make a progressive story. At the very beginning, we will study how our genome is organized in the nucleus. In the second lesson, we will understand how chromatin is modified by chemical modification and so on. So then we will use that information in the third lesson and so on. So please try to follow and everything will be good. Okay. I told you the very last activity in Moodle is the background health, and it's just a tutorial. I don't care about it. If you have any kind of missing information in your head, just go there, try to find it, and recover. Okay. We are almost at the end of the first part. Very good, because I'm tired. Okay, so you will in the slides, quite important, in the slides you will have sometimes this kind of small green, yellow, sentences or titles. This is a kind of basic knowledge. We want mechanism of DNA replication. We will never talk about the mechanism of DNA replication, but for some of the discussion we made, it's important. So if you don't have in your background the mechanism of DNA Okay, this is up to you. To go back to your old books and try to recover the information. Okay, so I try to put this kind of label every time I find a some subject that probably is important to you to remember. And then good. So I think that we have more or less finished the organization part. So if you have any question on organization, please tell me. And then we start with an introduction that is just a kind of general introduction to the course, to the subject of the course. And before starting, I have to say, the review, which is in the site, unfortunately the line was on and then it was off again, so I cannot show you, but you find in the very first section this textbook, which is a review from Levine. Michael Levine is one of the most important scientists in transcriptional control, and he has made a very nice, very good review article in 2014, that is 4 years ago, and still very good. So this is the very starting point, okay? So in these days that you have from today to Monday, that is the next lesson we will have together, you will start to read it. I say start to read it because it's important, not trying to read it all and read very quickly and then not, don't understand almost anything. It is important that you read understanding. So please go through this review article slowly, try to understand whatever you can do, okay? Especially don't read the very last part, that is a kind of systems biology approach, is very difficult to understand. So just first part, okay? And then we because this is the content we will discuss, okay? So please do it. So coming to the introduction. The introduction is today is just to, is not really something that you have to learn, okay? There is really nothing to learn here today. But it's something that I will try to explain why we are doing this kind of course, okay? And this kind of monographic course. As I was saying before, when the genomes started to be understood, that is not exactly when the sequence was made, because the sequences was just kind of, you know, a description of letters. Okay, and when there was the very first release of the human genome, nobody actually understood what this was inside. It was just a sequence of story, and there were only very few, very little section of this genome to be understood, actually. Okay, so it was kind of unknown universe in that case. When we started to understand, means in the what we call scientifically, we call the post-genomic era. That means all the studies that we started, based on the 2003 publication of the first human genome sequence, and started to look at the function of this genome. So we started to understand many things, and we look at the organization of genomes, that is quite kind of very complex and very ununderstandable from the human point of view. Because we have a large number of protein encoding genes that are more or less, depending on the database you look at, something like from 19,000 to 20,000. This is the number more or less today, okay? Why it is variable? Well, good question is why it is variable, because we have good evidence for only a part of them. Good evidence means that we know the protein product of it. Okay, so from many genes we know that the sequence is good, They are organizing extents and entrants, and if you put extents inside, you can see a very good open reading frame. But from some of them, we have no evidence that the protein is made. So we know that it is there, it is transcribed, we have an RNA, messenger RNA, but we don't see the products. Okay, it's kind of a practice. So some of the database classify them as a protein coding gene, sometimes does not. So this is the discrepancy that you see. Yeah, but anyway, the number is something like a little less than 20,000 genes, okay? And we have a large number of non-protein coding genes. They are very, very many more than the protein coding genes, because we have approximately the same number of long non-coding genes. Then we have a huge number, something like 9,000 genes that encode for microRNAs. And then we have a plethora of other genes encoding small or medium-sized RNA with different functions. So there are many, many of those. Okay. Then we have wide intergenic spaces. And when we say intergenic space, means that we have called some section genes and we don't know what is inside in between, so we call them intergenic. But it's not a real definition. Maybe that tomorrow somebody of you making the master thesis discovers that some of this intergenic space actually contains some functional element, and so it will be reclassified as a non-intergenic element or something else. Okay, so this kind of dynamic definition. And then we have a huge, really huge number of repetitive and transposable elements. Huge. They account for more than 50% of our sequence. That's a lot, okay? What is repetitive elements? Whatever. We will try to learn them. Probably you know already some about this story. If I say a word like lines, do you know what is lines? Never heard about it? Okay, so I should do something to describe what it is. Lines. Lines means long interspersed non-coding elements, and we will see what they are, how many of them. There is a kind of real story. And then we have signs, for example, that means short interspersed elements. For example, if I mention one of them, maybe that somebody of you knows it. Something like if I say the LU element, ALU1 element, nobody knows about it. This is a repetitive element in our genome that is approximately 200 to 300 base pairs long, and is typical of human. The mouse has not anything similar to that. And actually we use it in the lab to discriminate human DNA from mouse DNA when we make, you know, hybrid experiments or something. And it has something like 1.5 million copies in our genome. It's incredible. We have these copies all around, sometimes in introns, sometimes in genes, sometimes promoters, everywhere. That's kind of crazy story, okay? And transposable elements are elements that are found in different positions in each of us. I mean, elements that are, for example, in my genome is close to, I don't know which gene, and then in your genome is a little far away. Or maybe you have 3 copies of it and I have only 1, and that's it. I mean, they are jumping elements from the evolutionary point of view, not in a human being. Usually they are quite stable in the same position, but from the evolution point of view, they jump everywhere. Okay. So this makes a picture of an extremely complex story. Okay, it's like having, from the human point of view, it's like having a book in which you have a romance, okay? But sometimes the page is interrupted by completely unrelated sport journal half article, okay, and then the romance starts again, and maybe it starts again, but not in the same order that you expect. Okay, so the first part of the page was talking about Mr. X making taking care of the flowers in the garden, and then you have this sport report, and then it starts again speaking about the priest of the village in another village making a mess or something. So it's completely unrelated. Okay, and from our point of view, it's very difficult to understand. Also, we don't have any kind of logic of the disposition of the geographical maps of genes in the genome, okay? You remember, of course, Escherichia coli. Everybody of you knows it. And if I talk about the lactase operon, everybody knows what it is. Okay? The lactase operon is a splendid, from a human point of view, is a splendid example of how a human will organize an operon. I need the three enzymes. Okay, for making three enzymes, I need three open reading frames, sequence. Okay, and when I need all the three enzymes, I put a switch. Okay, on off, transcribe, no transcribe, upstream of the sequence, and then I place the three sequences. So easy, and I make only one RNA which contains the three sequences. So the amount of proteins that I express is completely coordinated. It's easy. Why the bacteria that are so simple, they do a very simple, from the human point of view, organization of the genes, and we make a complete mess. Because if I look at the same genes, in our genomes, the three enzymes are placed on different chromosomes. So what is the logic of placing three enzymes that have to work together, okay, biologically, biochemically, they have to be in the sequence, and they are completely far away from each other. That's kind of difficult to understand. So the logic of our genome is very complex, okay, and this is the and the reason why the title of the slide is that, okay, we don't know the function, the coordination of the function of the proteins and non-coding genes and so on, in 3D, so in the situation of the interface nucleus, is something that is a very complex problem. And there is an international project in which there are something like 25 laboratories around the world that are trying to understand, to make some data to understand how the genes are spatially organized in our nucleus and how the activity of them is coordinated. It's very, very difficult. Okay, genomes, of course, contain all the information for all the functions that an organism needs. This is a kind of problem, you know, because not everybody is convinced about that. You are convinced? Are you? I mean, the very first. Here. Just look at the very first sentence in this line. And then I ask you again, are you convinced about this sentence or not? This is, you can say your opinion, it's not a problem. We have plenty of time today, no problem. Yeah?
I am not convinced because I think of lightning
turns
example.
Think of?
Vitamins.
Yeah.
That we have to put inside the organism to nutrition. Yeah.
But I can tell that the pumps that actually take the vitamins essential for us and not the other ones are encoded in our genomes. I mean, I'm not saying that in genomes you have all what is needed for life. It's a different story. Of course, you have no food, you have no energy income in the genome, but I mean the functions. It's a kind of debated question. Yeah.
Part of the information for the development of the organism is contained in the present injection cells.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of experiments. This is a problem, it's not. Sometimes today we assume that this is true, but it's not completely. We have not completely, knowledge of it, okay? I know, we take a somatic cell and we implant in a unnucleated egg and we get an organism. It's working, undoubtedly. There are many, many experiments of that kind. So. It's probably true, but it doesn't mean that you have still to put in a cytoplasm, okay? So, for example, the mitochondria have functions. So, I don't know, but just think about it. But, okay, try to make a conciliation. Conciliation is that, of course, 99.99% of the function that is in an organism are encoded by our genomes, okay? So this is a kind of story. Of course, all these aspects that you see here are encoded there. So cell division, development, cellular differentiation, cell-to-cell communication, response to stimuli, response to environment, and that they are all encoded in the genome. And this we know very, very well this story because there are so many genes that actually, if I delete them, I completely subvert all this kind of function. So the problem is that, of course, this genome, let's say, and saying genome, we have a technical meaning that is, of course, all the sequences in our DNA. But there is also a kind of philosophical meaning that is all the possibilities, let's say, genetic possibilities, a little different. Are present in all the cells of our organism, okay? This is a fixed concept. And this is true because I can today, as you know, I can sequence single cells. I can take single cells from out of this lady and sequence them by NGS, and I can check the sequences, and they are 99.99999999% identical. Why not 100%? Because there are somatic mutations. Our genome is exposed to insults, to hits coming from the environment, chemicals, whatever. Just normal metabolism of the bases and maybe some repairing mechanism that fails a little bit. So there are some modification. When modification are really heavy, we get cancer. Okay. But usually, if you have modification, the cell die, everybody forgets about it. We have so many billions and billions and trillions that just forget it, okay? And so nothing happens. But is the use of this genome identical in cells? I say the question again. Is the usage of the genome in different cells identical?
No.
Of course not. Okay? So every cell uses only a part. Can you mention one gene, for example, in your knowledge that is only expressed in one kind of cells and not in another one? That you can try to dig out of your souvenirs. Good. Myelin, what is myelin? It's a protein.
Lipid protein.
Okay. It's a lipid?
Or no, protein with a lipid.
Okay. Which is expressed in?
Schwann cells.
Okay. Is it expressed in epithelial cells? Not really. Another popular gene which is expressed only in one type of cells and on the other ones? Wow, hemoglobin. Who is expecting that? Hemoglobin, of course, is present only in red cells. Okay, no other tissue in my body even thinks about expressing hemoglobin because it's not its business. Okay, another one. Another one that is more familiar to me. And this is also the way, because I choose a woman and not a man. It's familiar to me because I study breast cancer, as I told you before, so it's kind of familiar. This is development of the mammary gland. It's one of the probably unique tissues which develops after birth. So you have all the phases of differentiation of the glands that actually develop after birth. And what does the mature mammary gland produce? I repeat the question. What does the mature mammary gland produce? You don't know? You don't know what the mature mammary gland produces? I'm sure you do. Milk. What is the main component of the milk? You don't know? You make cheese with milk. Casein. Never heard about casein? In Italian, people who make cheese call it caseificio, that is casein. Okay. Casein. Casein and lactalbumin, they are the two main components of the milk, and they are produced only by differentiated mammary gland cells, and no other cells in the body will never think about producing that lactalbumin and casein. Okay? So just examples, but we can continue for all the week mentioning proteins that are expressed only in one cell types. Okay? Then there are many other proteins that are expressed, on the contrary, in all the cell types. Can you mention one protein which is present in all cell types?
Actin.
Then? Another one, please.
Exokinase.
Exokinase, there are different isoforms. Because, so glucokinase and exokinase, they have different level of expression, different tissues. It's a kind of sub-immobile. to mention. Anyway, another protein which is present in all the cells. There are so many. There are so many. It's incredible that you cannot mention one of them. Ribosomal proteins, of course. Ribosomal proteins are everywhere. There is no cell. Actually, you were very right, because I was trying to say RNA polymerase. And then I thought about, wait a minute, red cells do not have nuclei anymore, so they do not have any RNA polymerase inside. It's true. This is one exception. Actually, also for the stability of genomes. First, I say that the genome is identical in all the cells. Is that true? Really true? Or we do have exception to this rule? Do you know any exception? Think about it. I'm sure that when I reveal that to you, you will say, oh yeah, of course. The question is, when it was on the other slide, I said, I affirmed that all the cells in the organism possess the exactly the same genome, with the mutational exceptions. Okay. But is that really true?
There are gametes.
No.
There are gametes inside the human body.
Wow. Well, gametes is a kind of, say, different story. This is gametes, of course, they are haploid. The other cells are diploid. But looking at the sequence, I have to say that it's kind of, you know, we say in Italian, questione di lana caprina. It's a kind of flavor. okay. No, but I'm meaning differentiated cells, I mean cells. Not the gametes.
Lymphocytes.
Wow, you want something. I don't have anything to surprise you. But anyway, lymphocytes, you know that there is the VDJ-VJ recombination. You remember that? Okay. So in all the lymphocytes, there are small parts of the immunoglobulin genes, and not only the immunoglobulin genes, also the T cell receptor genes and so on, that are lost. Okay, you remember that recombination event brings two distant parts together, and then the part inside is eliminated. So actually, we have to say that the sequence, also there is a hypervariable sequence, if you remember, in which the sequence is mutated a little bit. So, I mean, there are exceptions to the rules, okay, but the rules is still valid, okay? Good. So, we were talking about the usage of the genome, and we're thinking about the fact that not all the genes are expressed in the same way in all the cells. So the next question is, do you think that this kind of tissue or cell-specific expression of the gene is only a qualitative story, or it may be also a quantitative story? I say it in another way. Do you think that the genes are either on or off? Okay, in different cell types, or that they can be expressed at the different levels in different cell types. That is a kind of different story. What do you think? Which of the hypotheses? The first one, on off, or the second one, levels? Who of you votes for the on-off hypothesis? The body. Who of you votes for the quantitative hypothesis?
Can we say both of them are completely true, or any of them?
Yeah, of course. You are right, probably. As usually, the minority is the... okay, no, it's true. I mean, we have genes that are completely on-off, okay? As in the case that you mentioned before, hemoglobin... And genes in which the expression is, we say, modulated, okay? So the quantity of expression of gene is a real variable in cell, not only in different cell types, but also in different stages of the cell life, okay? Also responding, for example, and this was the question to arrive to the content of this slide, also in function of stimuli, okay? Coming back to the story of Escherichia coli lactase operon, is lactase operon always on in Escherichia coli? Say that again. Escherichia coli. Is the lactase operon always on in Escherichia coli? When it is turned on? Yeah. Okay, so this is stimulus. I mean, bacteria are simple guys. They have no philosophy. They eat and reproduce. The only two things that they know how to do. Okay, so they eat, and if lactase is present, they have to utilize lactase, and then they turn on the genes encoding the enzymes necessary to use it. And that's it, okay? We have a little more complex organisms. We have different stories and different necessity, needs, and many times the activity of cells, as you know, are regulated in function of stimuli arriving from other cells, for example, okay? Either with a cell-to-cell contact, or in a paracrine way, or in an endocrine way. Okay, this is endocrine. Okay, when you have puberty, during the puberty of the mammals, the mammary gland is very little. You have small branches. It's completely afunctional. No way to produce milk from this structure again. Okay. And it's standing there until a stimuli arrives. What is the stimuli? It's estrogen. If you don't have estrogens, no way to develop any further. Okay? We know that because you can take an animal, a horrible experiment, and take ovaries out of the animal. I never did this kind of experiment, but my grandfather did. Scientifically, of course, not my grandfather. Okay? And there is no development because there is no estrogen. No estrogen, no development. So, this, what is this in terms of genes? What is this stimulus arise and the original tissue starts branching, proliferating and branching and developing and getting bigger and bigger, and arrives until this stage in which the animal mammal is ready for reproduction. Okay? This adult stage. What happens in terms of gene? What happens to the genes in this? Yeah, there are many genes that are switched on. Okay? So one question is estrogen capable, is estrogen an instructive molecule? Okay? Again, making philosophy, I promise, we never do philosophy thereafter, only today. But what I mean is that estrogen is a small steroid molecule, okay? I give it to the animal, to the whatever, okay? Today we are able to cultivate, to put this in culture, so that we are not to kill animals just to see it, okay? But what I mean is that we put estrogen inside. Is this small molecule instructive, as intrinsic information to guide the gene expression, in your opinion? Which kind of experiment you can do to resolve this problem? You can try to put estrogen on another tissue. If estrogen was instructed, you take whatever tissue, of course, not completely differentiated, give estrogen and it will get a mammary gland. Of course it is not, it doesn't work. Estrogen is not instructed. Estrogen is just a switch. So the gland has prepared gene expression, okay? So during the early phase of development, the genome, think about the genome of this guy, they have already prepared a response. What means prepare? We try to understand in the cures. What means that some of the genes are already, let's say, exposed, okay? Are there, are exposed to the stimuli. Others are not. Okay, so you have a kind of preparation of the genome. When the estrogen arrives, it will turn on the genes that are already pre-programmed to work. I am sure that you know this story because you have studied programming and reprogramming of cells. You heard about stem cells, you heard about differentiated cells, you heard about reprogrammed cells that are coming back to the totipotency stage. Okay, so if you think, if you reflect about this story, means that when you are completely undifferentiated, means the two-cell embryos or four-cell embryos, okay, at the very early stage of development, all the genes are there and they are totipotent, okay, so they can do whatever. Then starting from the very phase of differentiation, you have some genes that are completely put out of the story, not eliminated, they are there, but they are just put in a condition in which they do not respond anymore to any kind of stimuli. Okay? We say they are heterochromatic. This term you know already, heterochromatin, heterochromatic. And other genes are put in a situation in which they can respond to the following stimuli. They are euchromatic. Okay? And then this is a kind of, you know, progressive decision, because as you know better than I do, all developments, all differentiation has many different stages, okay? So the cells usually do not differentiate in one single hit. They have different stages in between, and all intermediate stage have different chromatin situations. So the genome is, okay, partially active, partially inactive, and so on. Okay, so when the stimuli arrive, you can go, and then there are another stimuli here, because when you have a, you're in pregnancy, of course, the mammary gland develops a lot more, as it, probably you know, and then when you arrive here for the production of milk, that is the final objective of all the story, of course, estrogen is not enough. Do you know what is the stimulus for producing milk? Prolactin, I heard. Prolactin, okay? Prolactin is a hormone that is meant for making milk. So when the cells are hit by prolactin, they start producing milk, secreting milk, okay? So all this means, it's just an example, the example in which I am more confident for a scientific reason. And all this development is actually guided by stimuli, but is programmed inside the gene, okay? Because I cannot make the same kind of differentiation with any other tissue, okay? So it means that in the very early phase, in that small part of the body of the embryos and the fetus in which there was the crest, okay? This is a development of mammary gland, is just an inflection of the ectoderm. Okay, the ectoderm of the embryos, and then it just gets inside a little bit more, okay, in a line, depending on the species of mammals, you have two or three or four, three no, four, six, or eight, even eight points in which you have this kind of epithelium that actually gets inside the mesenchyme, and then you have a very small branch. Puberty and then stay. Okay? So you have all the different phases. That actually corresponds to different states of the genome. Okay? So, what we say, we can say that the cells activate timely specific genetic programs to give diversified functions. Okay? A genetic program is the is a concept, is not something real, is the sum of all the genes that are necessary to give a phenotype, okay? Or to perform a function. You have to, for example, the genes that are necessary to go into mitosis is the genetic program of mitosis. The genes that are necessary to express all the proteins necessary to death are the genetic program of death, and so on, okay? And it's a little different from before. We were talking about qualitative and quantitative aspect, okay? This is a pure qualitative aspect, okay? But also quantitative. We say gene expression, okay? And we call, for example, gene expression profile is a different thing. Because the expression profile means that each gene has a different level of expression. Okay. Of course, when we talk about gene expression, usually there is again a popular thing that is okay. Gene expression means transcription. No. Of course, if a gene is not transcribed, it is not expressed. This is true. Okay, because it's the first act. Okay. But then there are many, many other levels of regulation, okay? So there are, you have transcription, you have processing, localization of the messenger RNA, and so on, translation, post-translation, and so on. And so on. So there are many levels. So when we talk to gene expression, actually, we indicate the final product, okay? So if everything works, you finally you have the gene expressed. Okay. The very last story for today. I told you before that there is not a real geometrical logic of where these genetic programs are placed. Okay, so genetic program means several genes to make a function. And the genes, where are they? Probably in our genomes, they are sparse everywhere. Different chromosomes, different locations, and so on. So what is the, how can an activity in the cells coordinate the expression of all these genes? Actually with proteins. Proteins that actually recognize the places in which these genes are, and they activate or repress the transcription or the chromatin status, okay? Just think that in human, we say that in human we have something like 20,000 protein encoding genes, okay? Well, now think that we know something like 2,500 proteins that actually work recognizing genes. We call them transcription factors, right? Recognize sequences, bind to DNA, and regulate expression. So in some way it means that more than 10% of our genome is actually devoted to proteins that control itself. Okay? So it's a kind of, just to say that it's kind of complicated matter. Controlling the activity of genes is something like a complex. Okay? So when you have regulatory network means all the proteins, all the interaction between proteins that actually bring about this kind of genome programming, okay, during development, during establishment of tissues, organs, cell types, and during response to stimuli. So they actually respond to which genes have to be expressed, when the genes have to be expressed, how much they have to be expressed, and for how long, because there are extraordinary things in biology. For example, everybody knows about the CFOS gene. Never heard about CFOS? CFOS is a kind of general master switch. It's a transcription factor and is activated in all the cells whenever there is a stimulus, okay? Whichever stimulus, the first response you have is FOS expression. It's a kind of peaks. And this expression of this protein CFOS usually lasts for about half hour. So in a very few minutes, the gene is activated, it makes RNA, the RNA is translated, makes a lot of protein. And this protein is accumulating a little bit in half an hour, then reaching a maximum, and then as soon as it reaches the maximum, the mechanism that destroys it actively. Okay, so it has a peak of 30 minutes in which you have this protein going up. That's fantastic. Means that you have mechanisms to express it, reasons to express it, logic to express it, of course. And then you have valid reason to eliminate it as soon as possible, because probably the signal that you have to have should be very short and pulse. So, of course, there are many, many stories going. Okay? Okay, just to finish, but we mentioned it already. Was just something about the genome, but I think that we can delay this part because it's late. So, okay. So we start again. On Monday, talking about a little bit about genomes and so on. Okay. Monday. Tomorrow, I switched lesson tomorrow with molecular pharmacology.